Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today we're taking on the PBS Frontline investigative report on supplements that appeared last week to the consternation, perhaps, of many viewers like you who saw a very biased presentation of the supplement industry in an effort to dig up dirt on vitamins and supplements. PBS mustered a group of so-called experts, most of whom arch foes of supplements. They did also interview today's guest, Dr. Daniel Fabricant, who is CEO of the National Products Association. And Dr. Fabricant did his best, but under withering questioning, I'm not sure that he could push back against some of the allegations that were made in that biased broadcast. And so we wanted to give him a little bit of a chance to talk more about his perspective on the supplement industry. So another of the contentions made in the Frontline expose is that there's no evidence that supplements are really beneficial. That, yeah, maybe there are a few instances where people suffer from vitamin deficiencies and they need a specific supplement, you know, traditional diseases like scurvy. But Frontline even trots out a 2013 Annals of Internal Medicine editorial, a notorious editorial entitled "Enough is Enough, Stop Wasting Money on Vitamin and Mineral Supplements." And that article declares, quote, "We believe that the case is closed. Supplementing the diet of well-nourished adults with most mineral or vitamin supplements has no clear benefit and might even be harmful." So what say ye, Dr. Fabricant, to that allegation?
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, I think that that's completely laughable. I mean, you know, they brought up fish oil as an example on Frontline. Yet, you know, what does fish oil do? Yet somehow there's a drug approved for fish oil. So it clearly does something, and we know the drug indication is on triglycerides, and a lot of that indication is based on supplement research. They built on the supplement research that was established as proof of concept and got a drug approved. So, you know, the notion that there isn't research out there showing efficacy is laughable. You know, and part of it is just common sense, too. How many of us eat a good diet, Dr. Hoffman? I know I'm guilty of not doing that. I try to do better by my kids. But, you know, 5 to 8 servings of fruits and vegetables a day with, I think, a busy schedule is very tough for many people. So taking a supplement as kind of nutritional insurance, well, you got to get it from somewhere. So it makes a lot of sense, and studies have shown that it makes a lot of sense, whether the indicator is quality of life, bone density with calcium, things like that. You know, you see an effect. So that's completely laughable, one. But, you know, then they get into that there's, you know, there's all this risk in some of these meta-analyses that have gone back and looked at all-cause mortality, when all-cause mortality wasn't a primary, secondary, tertiary, or even quaternary endpoint in any of these studies. It's basically, you know, it's moving some math around and finding subgroups that may, for whatever reason, have shown a higher incidence of whether it's mortality or who knows what the endpoint is. But, you know, you can't do clinical studies with good reason to show harm. Geneva Convention speaks against that. There's a lot of really good laws against that, bioethics laws. So I find it a little bit dishonest that, you know, it's just basically, it's no different than me going, hey, everyone, you know, going to a certain junkyard where, let's say in Germany, where I know there's a lot of German cars, and saying that, hey, these German cars seem to cause more deaths than other cars. Well, yeah, I'm in Germany at a wreck site. So it's not really, you know, it's basically, you know, you're predetermining an outcome. It's not really a study that measures the validity of those sorts of outcomes, and with good reason. So, you know, I think the bigger issue is if there were real harm from ingredients, you know, I think those things tend to show up. The Frontline case brought up the issue in Hawaii where a liver transplant was needed. It's a very rare occurrence. But again, when it happened, the tools were there. And based on approximately 20 adverse events, the product was removed from the shelves and consumers were further protected. You can't say the same about certain pharmaceuticals with that. How many tens of thousands of AERs did it take with the COX-2 inhibitors to get those products removed from consumers' hands?
Right.
So, again, I think these are all important comparisons that we tried to bring out. Some of it ended up on the cutting room floor, as we figured it did, but we think we made a pretty good effort, at least in punching back on some of it.
And in fact, it was kind of disingenuous because one of the frontline experts was Preston Mason, PhD, who cut open some fish oil capsules to demonstrate how inferior they were to a pharmaceutical version of omega-3 called Vascepa. Now, I think the price comparison when you go to buy Vascepa is that it's $256 for a bottle of 120 on drugs.com. When you buy an equivalent pill made by a major manufacturer, in this case Nordic Naturals, Ultimate Omega, it costs just $59.46 for a bottle of 180. And, you know, clearly there are some issues with quality that you kind of, you do get your, what you pay for. I mean, you really have to sometimes go for premium brands to achieve equivalence to pharmaceutical purity. But it doesn't mean that only pharmaceutical drugs adhere to high standards of manufacturing.
Yeah, the GMPs for dietary supplements, and I helped administer that rule, or FDA had, you know, there's certainly a legal consequence there. Firms don't meet it, and it's a very strident consequence if people don't meet it and aren't manufacturing to quality. So yeah, the standards are there. And with the fish oil example, if memory serves, those products were purchased in New Zealand, so they weren't even U.S.-based products. So I was a little confused about that, too. We're talking about the U.S. marketplace, so let's at least survey that market appropriately and fairly. You know, the laws are obviously different in New Zealand, and the fact you're going to try the U.S. industry based on products sold in New Zealand seems a bit odd to me. But that aside, that notwithstanding, I mean, anytime those sorts of studies are done for TV, they're done for a gotcha effect, but generally what they're missing is any sort of robustness to the data. That wasn't, to my knowledge, a U.S. peer-reviewed study. I don't know what products that are implicated, but if they are U.S. products, you know, we've always advocated if there's a problem with a product, well, let the industry know and let the government know so something can be done about it, and done about it quickly. Again, I think that where there are problems, both the industry and the FDA or whoever the regulator is, depending on the issue, want to make sure consumers have, healthy options in the marketplace.
Indeed. And, you know, speaking of healthy options in the marketplace, there's also a big jihad underway by attorneys general, led by our own attorney general here in New York, Eric Schneiderman, who alleges that supplements they're just nothing there, that they're made of phony ingredients, that they're adulterated with things that you don't want in the capsules. And he's filing suit against certain retailers to get them to pull things from the shelves. But it relies on something called DNA barcoding, which is a pretty controversial methodology for assessing supplement potency. And I've pushed back on that in previous podcasts, and yet they're resurrecting that as the standard for assessing supplement quality. What do you say to that?
Well, DNA barcoding is a technique, and like any technique, it's got its pluses and minuses. It's high end and its limitations. I think, you know, with DNA barcoding, at least as it was done by the New York Attorney General, they did it on extracts. There shouldn't be much DNA left in extracts, so it was completely from the jump a bit misguided. And we worked with the New York Attorney General. We met with their office pretty much every month from April of last year until December of last year. And, you know, we wanted them to understand the industry better, and we wanted to have a better idea of what their concerns were as well. But as you pointed out, a lot of this is political. You know, which attorney general's offices are, and there are good attorneys general and bad attorneys general. I had a breakfast yesterday morning with the attorney general of Michigan, and he very, very thoughtful and, you know, looks at things in a way that, hey, you know, is this really about consumer protection? And I think that that's the point. Attorney general can be very valuable. Unfortunately, in any industry, there are folks out there making claims they shouldn't make or selling products that, you know, are completely, you know, based on falsehoods. And attorney general can help address some of those issues if those bad actors are found out to be out there. But focusing on this issue just seems to be, it's kind of to your point, a bit of a red herring, and wasn't about consumer protection, because ultimately the same products were allowed right back on the shelves. In February of last year, the Attorney General of New York called the products a public health catastrophe, yet let the exact same products back on shelves. So how is that protecting consumers? How is that a public health catastrophe? It just, again, sounds like a bit of politicking.
All right. Well, but indeed, there are some issues with the industry. There are some bad players. I spoke to Steve Mister, who's your colleague over at CRN, a couple of months back, and he said that the supplement industry, to some extent, is a tale of two industries. They're, you know, mostly good, reputable players who follow GMPs, who play by the rules, and then there's sort of the renegade players who sometimes try to sneak in adulterated products, sometimes even with dangerous ingredients imported from China is particularly a trouble spot in terms of adulteration. So how does a consumer stay wary of some of these potential issues?
Well, I think there's a few ways consumers can arm themselves. And I somewhat agree with Steve's point. I think there's always, within any industry, and they sent us to, the FDA sent myself and Dr. Helmes, who's my deputy here at NPA, to Harvard to learn more about the regulatory arts, if you will. And I think every industry comprises really three groups: a group that's going to do anything they can to be compliant and really be a best-in-class firm, a group that's going to do absolutely everything they can to break the law, those people that are hiding in the shadows, and then the middle group, who by and large wants to do the right thing, but they're going to shift left or right based on how hard the book gets thrown at those bad actors and how rewarded the good actors are. And so I think with that in mind, I think consumers first and foremost can use, some of the federal government resources, particularly FDA's website, FDA.gov. They list every Tuesday if there are warning letters, if there are recalls, of things like that. So someone can make easy use of the search function. It's a completely Googleable website, if you will. And certainly those firms that have regulatory issues that may give a consumer a moment of pause. Always talk to your physician, your healthcare provider, as to why you're going to use a supplement. I think that's really important. If you don't think you're getting enough calcium in your diet and you're coming to the age where you need more calcium in your diet, certainly talk to your physician first and foremost. They may have brands they've worked with in the past or research they've conducted in the past where they're more familiar with which products work best. And then the biggest thing is, those claims that are made on products, if they sound too good to be true, they probably are. So certainly stay away from those types of products that are claiming to, especially in the areas of sexual enhancement, weight loss, where they say you're going to, miracle weight loss. Look, weight loss is a function of a healthy lifestyle and changing the lifestyle. Can supplements help? Sure they can, but they can help in conjunction with a better diet and an exercise program. So, there's no magic bullets. We're not in the business of selling magic bullets. So I think that those are all important factors for consumers to arm themselves with in the marketplace.
So, Dr. Fabricant, what is it that the industry, and in particular the NPA, is doing to help root out some of these bad players? Is the industry going to attempt to regulate itself or police itself to avoid the potential that the government's going to swoop in and pass draconian regulations?
Great question. I think we work on a few fronts. I think first and foremost, you talked about self-regulatory. We do have a self-regulatory program through our educational foundation, the Natural Products Foundation. We've turned over, we actually since 2007 have sent approximately 500 quote-unquote warning letters, and they're not really warning letters like FDA warning letters, but to companies, both member companies and non-member companies alike, of claims that may be out of bounds. Most of those companies, over 80%, come into compliance. The ones that wouldn't come into compliance, the foundation actually turned them over to FDA and FTC, to which we can effectively tie about 33 to 34% of those 100-plus we've turned over into either warning letters or other actions. Hmm. So we are doing some policing and self-regulating, which we think is important. If firms are going to, if firms aren't willing to comply with things that are clearly, egregious, and we're not pointing out things that are you know, we're not talking about structure function claims and haggling over that. We're talking about claims about cancer and about diabetes and things like that that supplements just should not make. You know, so I think that that's encouraging. I also think a lot of what we do at the association level is educate regulators and educate legislators as to what's fair, what's foul, and where, you know, who the good guys are, what they're saying, and who the bad guys are and what they're saying, and how we can work together to get more action. Recently, we've worked with some of our champions in Congress to get a more cohesive plan from the Department of Justice as to how they're going to address some of the problems that are out there. One of them particularly is products that are spiked with drugs. You see them in the gas station. They claim to be as good as Viagra. Well, that's because they probably have bootleg Viagra in them. And those folks aren't in the industry. They're not members of my association or Steve's association. And really, they're just selling drugs. And unfortunately, they're hijacking the industry to do it. So we want to see from the Department of Justice a clear-cut plan to, you know, it's no different than any other drug trade. How are they going to get those guys off the streets? And so it besmirches our industry, which we don't want. And so those are the sorts of things we do on a day-in, day-out basis, in addition to try to tell the story of the benefits of supplements, you know, for both people's health, but also for the economy. It's a big part of the economy, creates a lot of jobs, and that's important as well.
So, in conclusion, what are today's intelligent medicine calls to action in relationship to NPA? And this story on Frontline, where can listeners access resources that inform them more about your response to the PBS Frontline report and also the supplement industry in general?
Sure, and I appreciate that opportunity. You know, I'll always tell people to become a member of a trade association, preferably ours, but if not ours, other organizations. And we're unique in that we have both retail and manufacturing members. But they can go to our site, npainfo.org, and certainly our responses to Frontline are out there as well. Also, one thing they can do through our site is write their congresspeople. We have a Save Our Supplements site, and when we see pieces of legislation that are either good for the industry or dangerous to the industry, we have a format to which they can write their member of Congress. It only takes a minute. All they have to do is put in their name, their zip code, and it goes right through to their congressperson and tells them, hey, why is this important to me, and what they expect their congressperson to do about it. And they're really balanced, thoughtful pieces that way. Also, a key thing to do, we've got our fly-in day coming up. Gather the masses, if you will, at least once a year, sometimes twice a year here in D.C., to go up and meet their members of Congress and really talk to them about the benefits of dietary supplements and answer any concerns they have. It's one thing for us as an association to go in and know different people in Congress, but they always want to hear from the people back home who voted them in and who can also vote them out.
And that's a really worthwhile activity. I've participated in some of those, not your fly-in, but in activities where we meet legislative representatives and express our views as consumers. And this is really, I think, democracy in action. A lot of people think that, you know, gridlock is preventing anything constructive from happening in Washington. But you can actually participate, and democracy can work when citizens are take an active role in government. So appreciate that effort. I want to thank you very much for your role in being the honest broker, the benign sheriff over there at NPA. And I hope you had a better time on today's broadcast than you did under the withering fire of the interviewers at Frontline.
I have some part of me, I enjoyed this tremendously. I also enjoy the fire, but I really appreciate the opportunity, Dr. Hoffman. Always a pleasure to speak with you, and look forward to speaking again soon.
Well, thanks a lot. Dr. Daniel Fabricant, who is CEO of the Natural Products Association, the NPA. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.